dbkmediaservices.com. Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox. Hello, SVC fans, and welcome in once again to Triple Crown Family Fun Center's SVC Sports Talk. This is show 251, our sixth spring show of 2019, and I am Bruce Knox, and I will bring in the other talented commentators momentarily. But first, I want to remind you that this and every one of our 251 shows has been brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center, located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. You can give them a call at 740-773-7529 or look them up on the web at triplecrownfamilyfuncenter.com, where they have all kinds of information about what you can do there, what you can eat there, and who you can meet there. All kinds of things. And don't forget, of course, in this time of proms and parties and graduations and so forth, you can get a ride in a luxurious state-of-the-art limousine and or party van. When you think of fun, think Triple Crown. We certainly do appreciate their sponsorship through these many, many years. I don't even remember what it is now, Shane, but whatever it is, they've been here for us. Eight, he says from the background there. First, I want to bring in our junior SVC expert, Mr. John Bruce. John, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Just been celebrating my big win at the Kentucky Derby with Maximum Security teamed up with Country House. Gonna hit a big exacta. Gonna turn it in later this week.
Yep.
I might not be on anymore after this.
So. Okay. So yeah. So you're leaving us, I guess, after this wonderful.
I mean, it's a big pay. It's a big payday. I think it was something like 250 to 1. So yeah. Put on my.
I didn't know that you dabbled in the horses. I didn't know that. So
I wanted to go with the long shot there. And,
that was a long shot. Yeah. I will tell you that. That was, and yeah. I don't know whether people noticed it today on Twitter or not, but John was, he was wrong, of course, but he was getting on, what's the guy's name up in Cleveland?
It's that McNeil. Yeah.
McNeil had set his son up for chastising somebody that put ketchup on their hot dog, John had said no, that mustard was not good and ketchup was better, and I quickly corrected him. And I think we need some kind of a poll. Maybe Shane can put that up on the website or something later on, so we can talk about which is better, which goes more naturally with hot dogs, mustard or ketchup.
Ketchup won't stain your skin.
Okay,
mustard will. I am not a big mustard fan. Just throwing that out there. Other people can like it. They're wrong, but they can like it. And it's just it's not a great topping.
I dare say you're wrong still. But I was just telling the guys before we went on tape that, you know, of course, there is no mention of ketchup, I don't believe, in the good book, the Holy Bible, but there is the mention of the mustard seed. Therefore, I think, you know, pretty much is put into us that way. And I did find, let me play you just a clip here of the mustard song.
I love mustard. I love it so very much. To put mustard on my hot dog and on my pretzel. Yes, yes, mustard.
That that hit number one, I think, back in, 1974, something like that. It's it's out there, John. I'm sorry, but
just look up the ketchup song by like Los Ketchuposos or something.
All right, we'll do that. But we obviously digress because we have yet to bring in when Mr. Shane Combs, who's just probably at this point shaking his head saying, what have I gotten into?
Well, I can honestly say in the previous 250 shows, I don't know if I've been more entertained than in that last 5 minutes. That was certainly interesting. I was glad that Joe Boggs decided to get involved there on Twitter as well.
Sure.
Like letting people know about the applesauce on top. He's referencing the eating of any pasta. So, John, like with the macaroni and cheese, spaghetti, mm-hmm. lasagna, anything like that, just put a little applesauce on top of it is what he was referencing there.
And
that was well said.
Is that a Combs tradition, or is that where did you get that?
Yeah, well, if I remember correctly, it was just an accident of, you know, the applesauce and the pasta mixing together at the younger age and like, oh, wow, that's really good. And then, you know. And going with it.
So that was on the training table at the Combs household.
Yes, yes. So I don't know if I get credit for that or if Matt gets credit for it, but nonetheless, it's really good.
So this is something that Matt participated in as well.
Yes, yes.
Huh. So if I start eating pasta and applesauce together, then great things will happen. I'll become a great sports mind and be able to score a lot, right?
Yeah, that's been my experience with it, yes.
All right. Well, it's fun to talk about, but I still think, and folks, you know, we'll give out email addresses and ways that you can get involved in our discussion of mustard versus ketchup and now applesauce, I guess, a little bit later in the show. But welcome in. We're going to start this soiree here with our three up, three down. It's similar to the headline segment from mid-year programs, and that can be anything and everything that's directly or indirectly involving baseball and softball. This section brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club, located at 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. Telephone number there, 740-986-4653. And if you can get in between the raindrops, you can have at or out there on the golf course. Look them up on the web, crownhillgolfclub.com. Call Kevin and the guys, and they can see what you can, what you need, and they will work something out for you. Again, Crown Hill Golf Club sponsoring our Three Up, Three Down this week, episode 251. Here we go, guys. I'm actually going to go to Shane because he's not quite as against mustard as Mr. Bruce is. So we're going to start with his first Three Up, Three Down. Shane?
Guys, let's go. A scheduling debacle should not take headline over fantastic finish here in the baseball side. We were set for some Friday night showdown there, and obviously the weather ended up winning out, and there's been a lot of confusion on makeup days and so forth. The league's had a pretty basic policy in place for, gosh, as long as I can remember in my last 25, 30 years, and some things got butchered. I know in one situation that Westfall had a legitimate problem where, you know, safety issue where they were hosting the Monday night SVC track meet. And I think some confusion got out there thinking that the whole league had to follow suit there. And Uniota and Adina, I know, used some nice patience and used some pretty good scheduling there. I believe, John, correct me if I'm wrong, they are going to play Monday night as we're recording.
Yes.
Sunday.
Yes.
Some of the other people I know not very happy moving to Tuesday because, you know, what happens here, Bruce, in this final week is now that we know our tournament draw, which we'll talk about, you know, throughout the show, I'm sure it'll come up in some of our segments. It, you know, you're trying to organize some non-league stuff. You're trying to get to that 27 game mark that you always try to promise your program and so forth. So when this stuff happens, that league game's still out there, and every time it rains, it moves back and it bumps something else out and so forth. So it's very frustrating, if I'm being honest, that some of these games are not getting played tomorrow night. But nonetheless, as my headline says, you know, that should not take away from what's going to be a fantastic finish. Now that it stretches out, no one's really getting an advantage pitching wise. Everybody's pitching staff should be strong. Yeah, if you play Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, whatever it is, it's not like, you know, you're waiting to see if someone else loses, or everybody kind of controls their own destiny that's involved. You know, Uniota's got to go to Adina and win. Zane Trace Westfall going to play straight up for a piece of it as well. So, still should be a fantastic thing for our league. Our league's had great balance. So whoever, you know, which, you know, the team or teams that, mm-hmm. that end up, you know, getting a piece of this in some way, certainly well deserved in this particular league. So, you know, best of luck to those teams. I'm sure we'll see some outstanding pitching matchups, and I have no doubt that whoever does come out on top, it'll be well deserved, because those are three really good baseball teams. And then Adine is really playing as well as anybody. So really, it's our whole top half of the league there on display.
All right. John, you want to go with your first three up, three down?
Golden once again. Another gold ball for Westfall softball means they have now won 31 straight SVC games. Very impressive run. Coach Redmond just – every year, it just feels like year in, year out, they're just at the top of the league or near the top of the league. And it's obviously not that far removed from their state championship run. And just really exciting time for softball up off Pearson Pike. The Westfall, they just crushed the ball. They've gotten some really good pitching. They won had a big seventh inning to clinch the league by themselves in a game against Uniota, which was a great bounce back after Avery Miller homered to tie the game in the bottom of the sixth. And then Westfall puts up a sixth spot to win the league. Then the next night they come out and win against St. Trace, and just 31 straight softball wins is very impressive in the league. They look like they're in good shape to keep it going into next year.
All right. Shane, you want to go up number two on yours, three up, three down?
Well, it's very similar to John's, where I'm asking how long does the gold expand, you know, in terms of Westfall. It's intriguing to look ahead. You know, this is a team that has a lot of pieces back. This is a team that mixes a lot of young and old. And, you know, when I look at that Uniota team, John, which I think we would both agree seems to be their biggest obstacle mm-hmm. this year and possibly in the next, it's just intriguing. You know, Uniota's improved so much in this past year, using the two pitchers with Fisher and Pinkerton, and those are obviously both very talented kids. Pinkerton's as good a position or offensive player as we have in our league as well. But you look at all the additions they had this year. You mentioned Avery Miller and the six home runs. I know from coaching against her how athletic Krissa Wheeler is. That was a nice get. The Campbell girl came back out. I'm sure I'm even missing some in their lineup. But, you know, as you go through that lineup, I mean, what an athletic group that, you know, that already returned some kids from last year, like Holt and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so, I look down through and I see names like, you know, Neff and on down the line. I start to look in the next year and I start to wonder how much of the gap will close again. I mean, that's, you know, obviously Kello at Huntington there, when she's on, she's proven that she's tough. And just throughout the league, I know there's some youth in the bottom half that'll get a year older. But when I see what Westfall's done this year, it's just really impressive, because they've been able to get good pitching. They've been able to play pretty good defense from what I've seen in the box scores and charting them throughout the year. Because in softball, I have to do so much on paper and through the stat sheet. And then obviously, offensively, it's unreal. It's just like they routinely just knock the ball out of the ballpark 3-4 times every night. So it is. It's impressive. Congratulations to them. And I guess it's intriguing to look down the road and just wonder, what does this look like year to year? Because over the last, 3 years, it's been complete domination.
Yeah.
With 2 years being gold.
John, you're up with your number two.
Mine goes a lot like Shane's number one. Mother Nature finally shakes up the baseball race. I mean, really, we had talked about it, like, you know, we've gotten really lucky. And then, of course, as soon as we say that, we get rained out last Friday. Then it comes back. We play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, which it didn't seem like we were even going to be able to play a couple of those days. And mm-hmm. then Friday, not able to play. And now the scheduling nightmare of, you know, when are we going to play? When aren't we going to play? I know they had said it had never happened before. As someone who it's happened to, it has happened. In 2003, we went out to Frankfurt, went to play on a Friday, got rained out, got back on the bus in the morning, went back and played Saturday morning. Now I know with the Adina prom, it wasn't going to be able to be done this week, and I'm not sure if the weather even cooperated enough Saturday morning mm-hmm. anyway. But now this week with, you know, we still have the two really big games. Obviously, just the straight up SEC championship game at Westfall with Westfall and Zane Trace on Tuesday, and then Union at Adina on Monday. You know, we still have those two big games. You know, it's kind of interesting because the teams can kind of haven't been really hurt by it. Pitching wise, because they can kind of load up their pitching to be whoever you want to throw in those games. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, especially with nobody playing in the tournament next week. And then you've got your non-league games and everything, but, hopefully the weather cooperates on Tuesday also, because, it looks like Monday, you know, this could be, you might be listening to it Monday night and go, it wasn't a nice night, but you know, it looks like it's gonna be a really nice night on Monday.
Yeah.
Be a really good time to get out and watch some good baseball. Then Tuesday, hopefully it cooperates and we'll watch a SEC title game up at Westfall.
I think we've had enough rain for a while. Our mud is still muddy.
I thought it stopped raining after April, because April showers, right?
Make flowers, right?
Yeah. I'm looking for flowers, but not more showers.
I gotcha. Shane, number three.
Let's go with the spread of opportunity. I just looked throughout the brackets, John, and there's always tough matchups out there. There's really good baseball throughout Southeast Ohio, but from what I could gather and the quick glance of the, you know, obviously it's a busy day for baseball coaches, but you're trying to get on the phones and pull up the brackets. And I know I had a birthday dinner for my wife and so forth. I'd do a lot of things, but from what I could gather, it looked like our league was able to spread out. There's not a lot of head-to-head where we're going to beat up on each other. And looking back at last week, you know, there are a few situations where SVC is going to meet, but in the early going, at least, even an opportunity there. When you look out, we talk about this in every sport, it seems like, guys, you hate the knocking each other out. You hate to sit there and see 2-3 head-to-head SVC matchups early to where you're going to knock the league out and so forth. In this situation, we move out. I love Huntington's draw there in D4, and you know, Southeastern kind of gets sent out to on the east side there by themselves. But again, a matchup that you know, with a McWhorter or a Wheeler or whoever coach, you know, Free would decide to go with, gives them a chance to be very competitive. And you know, and then when you look through, I mentioned Huntington there. Anytime with a Free or Roop or McCloskey, or again the depth that they have in the tournament setting, I think they're going to be all right. And then you know, Unioto on the D2 side. Now it's a little bit of a tougher grind because they have to win the two to get out as well. But I do think there's a little bit of advantage there in the first round because those play-in teams, John, correct me if I'm wrong, they have been three games. So, you know, you're playing on a Saturday and in an 8-9 matchup where it's pretty hard to throw off. And, you know, what's your prize is, oh, you get to go to Unioto on Monday night. I mean, so it's you know, I like their setup as well. Unioda has the two good arms, two proven arms there in the starting rotation that allows them to set up to do that. And then, you know, throughout D3, again, it's really, really tough. We know how good the baseball is around the Southeast District and the top half of the Southern Hills Athletic Conference, the entire SOC, very, very good. You know, with some other teams that, you know, bring some really good athletes and so forth. So the brackets, never easy. Sport like baseball, you know, the seating is always funny, John. You know this. I'm just telling the fans, like, where it's different. In softball, I feel like when you see the record, it's a little bit more of an indication of who they are. Where, Bruce, what happens in baseball is, you know, when you start to seed these things, you might think, oh, okay, I'm getting to play like a 6-13 team. Mm-hmm. Well, their number one might be, you know, 4-1 with an ERA under 3. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's who you're playing. You know what I mean? You're not playing the team that gets beat up in the non-league or in the doubleheader on Saturday because they don't have pitching or whatever. You're playing the tournament lineup of, hey, when this kid's on the mound, they've been 3-1 and they only give up about 3-4 runs a game. You're in a dogfight. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's something for fans to really pay attention to. It's not like in basketball. If you're a team that is, you know, 12-10, well, you pretty much run the same team out there every night unless you had injuries or so forth. Right. But in baseball, as starting pitcher, that's a big difference. So with that in mind, I like a spread of opportunity as my headline, because I just like the opportunity for our league to maybe showcase in a lot of different brackets and to kind of see where we stand and see how many we can get to advance.
All right, John, bring us up to the end here of 3 Up, 3 Down with your third one.
Now I'll go back to our Twitter conversation. Time for the Southeast District to catch up.
I like it. Well played.
Yeah.
Be honest with me. Since the mustard intro from Bruce there, did you make that up on the fly?
Yes,
that's awesome.
I had something much less fun. I know it worked out for our league. And like you said, Shane, I like our tournament draws. I don't love Adina having to face, you know, whatever Portsmouth West record is, because they're always good. And they seem like they never play games. You know, I don't love that first round matchup, but I really like their chance to get out. But it's just, I mean, if we have 6 districts in the state, 5 should not do it one way and one shouldn't do it the other. I harp on it every season and everything. It's probably annoying by now, but Southeast District's got to catch up to the rest of the state. It's not that difficult. I mean, especially in baseball, softball, where you're going to home sites anyway. It's not like you're trying to find one main site where you're playing. It's not that hard either. I mean, we already do the online voting. So, okay, well, we're online voting. Let's go meet. Let's place our teams where we want to play and when we want to play or who we want to play against and go from there.
I noticed real quick. Let me get your take on this since you brought it up, because it's well said. I was looking at some brackets earlier, and it's not just Division III. It's a lot of different divisions. You always seem to get a particular side of the bracket, meaning when I say side, I mean from east, from west, west from east, that it's just a lot better. So, you know, you're getting really an unbalanced bracket in terms of some seeding, aren't you, in terms of some of the matchups. Portsmouth West is a great example. I know the SVC was happy that you know, Westfall and Paint Valley, Adina, and Piketon were able to split. But I'll be honest, in looking at those options throughout the week, I never dreamed Portsmouth West would drop to 11.
Right.
And here they are. Yeah. Like you said, that's not an indication of who they are at all. And that probably wouldn't be the case in terms of an extended bracket, would it, throughout the entire district?
No, I don't think so at all. I think Portsmouth West would probably go after someone else. And I think the West, or however they say it is now, whatever most of the SBC teams, besides Southeastern's in, the West is much stronger. And that kind of also makes it a little more unbalanced. And then in Division II, the South, whatever, the South is extremely strong, compared to the North. I mean, like, you would think if St. Trace is playing in the North, you know, maybe they're still the three seed, but they're not facing a team like Gallia Academy that has a very similar record. Athens is really good. Oh, what do they get? They get to face Fenton County, who has the Able kid who's thrown like four straight shutouts. I mean,
beat Athens a couple weeks back, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's in one side, and then the other side, it's, you don't want to say it, but it's, well, you know, Circleville and Hillsborough, they're going to play in the sectional final. Like, something real weird has to happen for that to not happen. And then, like, in Division Four, I guarantee that Eastern Megs, seeing Huntington on that side, is going, oh, we don't like that.
Right.
What's your reward for being undefeated? Oh, you get to face a team that plays probably the most difficult schedule in Division Four, has an extremely proven coach, and you know you get to face them with their number one. Oh, and they got a bunch of seniors. That's just not ideal for a really good Eastern Megs team. And I mean, it's obviously difficult for. I mean, they'll still be the favorite going into that game because that's a really good team.
Sure.
And obviously, Huntington has to win over Leesburg first. But it's just, I just feel like if the Southeast would catch up with the rest of the state and do things, you know, like the rest of the state does. Maybe we get better matchups down the line instead of maybe some really difficult matchups early on, like Zane Trace and Athens as a second round game is ridiculous. And like I said, Adina Forsyth West is a ridiculous first round game. So I just would like to see the Southeast catch up and not mustard, because I don't know what even mean.
Thank you, Mr. Bruce, for that third one there. That the other two were okay. Yeah. Third one kind of stunk and probably left some stains on your hands too.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Good three up, three down. Busy agenda this week with postseason talk, postseason awards, and SVC track. Up next, we look at postseason outlook on the diamond. John's probably singing because he picked that one out.
It's a jam.
Yes, it is. George
Michael. Kind of puts you in mind of like a, 9 o'clock music for a sitcom back in the 80s or whatever, like once the kids were sent to bed or something.
Yeah. Oh, man. Guys, we've got some questions here for you. This section is of SVC Sports Talk, brought to us by North Fork Animal Clinic Boarding and Grooming, 773-PETS. It's North Fork Animal Clinic, where we care. They feel a good veterinarian's got to know each and every animal being treated and the temperament of that pet. So they know that the dogs and kitties and animals and so forth have likes and dislikes. And so they limit their practice to small animals so they can get to know everything about their patients. Call Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff at North Fork Animal Clinic, 740-773-PETS. I mentioned the questions here, guys. I'm going to kind of give a brief a look here at what we're going to be answering, and then we'll get to answer each one in order. We're going to ask these gentlemen first, I really like blank about our softball chances in the postseason. Then we turn to baseball and say, I really like blank when looking ahead to the postseason for baseball. And then we kind of flip it around and I say, my biggest concern for softball in the postseason is blank, and my biggest concern for baseball in the postseason is blank. So we start at the top. Really fine place to start. Guys, which one of you wants to go first? I really like blank about our softball chances in the postseason.
I'll go first.
Okay.
That way Shane can take me from being a Debbie Downer on this. I really like not that much. Softball in the postseason. It's just, I mean, I love Westfall's team. I love their makeup. I think that they have a really nice chance to make a good run. Then, you know, you have your second place team with Uniota, and they get to the district. If they get to the district, and you get to run into Sheridan, who's number two in the state. It's just, and I know sometimes with, you know, Division II stuff like that happens, but even Huntington and St. Trace, which are pretty much our third and fourth best teams all throughout the year, they don't have great matchups either. I do like Adina's chances to get a tournament win, Paint Valley's chances to get a tournament win, but then their matchups are not good either. I think that compared to baseball, their matchups are not nearly as favorable.
Wow. When we get to the other question, I don't know what you're going to put in there, but I'll let you worry about that in just a second. Shane, what do you say when you fill in the blank? I really like blank about our softball chances in the postseason.
I really like how good our best can be when I view things about our softball chances in the postseason. I can't disagree with John in terms of the matchups to the brackets or so forth, but I guess what I would look at if I were trying to keep the glass half full is I would look at the opportunity to, you know, when Kello of Huntington is on, I've had three or four softball people tell me that that's really, really good. You know, for whatever reason, there's inconsistencies there with young athletes. I think anyone's ever been in coaching can relate to that. But I've been told by, like I said, I know people from two different opponents for sure. Right off the top of my head, I can remember them saying that when she's on, it's really elite. The way Dudgeon is thrown in the circle for Westfall, and when you start getting the swings of Tackett and Mullins and Fulin and that long list of athletes and Williams and so forth all the way down that lineup, you know, that's really, really elite. I think you touched on it there a little bit, John, maybe not past the first round, but opportunities to maybe play into matchups. You know, like, for example, how valuable could it be for the Paint Valley group to take a shot at Portsmouth Clay, not just now, but into the future. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're talking about a Paint Valley team that just beat Kello this past this past week, beat Zane Trace. So, you know, opportunities, again, when you're at your very best. You know, an athlete like Stanforth pitched really well. An athlete like McFadden hits a home run, and before you know it, you're into the fifth, sixth inning with a chance. So, again, it might be a stretch. I don't know. Obviously, that Uniota lineup, we heard Jeremy Ward say last week on our 250th show, talked about the depth and the completeness of the Uniota lineup and how athletic it was. So, how far down the line, I don't know. I think John makes fair points, but I do think that the softball league has proven that when those particular teams who maybe fight some consistency issue, when they are at their best, it's a pretty elite level.
All right. John, we're going to go next to you, fill in this blank. I really like blank when looking ahead to the postseason for baseball.
I really like the opportunity for the SVC to show its mettle against the rest of the Southeast District. Like we kind of talked about earlier, there's not a lot of, I'm not even sure if there's any matchups where the SVC will play each other.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a chance for the SVC to play literally every other conference in the Southeast District no later than the district semifinal.
Huh.
So, you know, we have the Southern Hills 1 and 2 with Lynchburg and Leesburg. We can face both of those early. SOC 2, and of course I screwed up because we won't face the SOC 1. But otherwise, it's going to be seeing everybody. I mean, Zane Trace will face the OVC and then have a chance to face the TVC champion or TVC Ohio second place team. Just depends on how the matchups roll. I'm really excited to see how the league fares against these other leagues. Unioda could face a ECOL with Warren, or the FAC with Jackson. Just it should be fun to see how the SVC does against these other leagues, because I feel like most of us believe the SVC is an extremely good and talented baseball league every year. And I really like when we have matchups like this to where we can kind of see how we do.
Sure. All right, Shane, how do you complete this? I really like blank when looking ahead to the postseason for baseball.
I really like how battle tested our league is when looking ahead to the postseason for baseball. I mentioned earlier, guys, about how usually when it comes to tournament lineups, you're going to get the best version of that particular opponent. So throw the record out the window and know that you're getting their best particular lineup on that day. And what that usually lends itself to is a lot of close games, at least early. You know, a lot of times, John, the good teams will break the thing open, you know, at some point or whatever. But at least early, it usually will lead to some close battles and some situational things that has to happen. And you'd like to think you're battle tested. Maybe you haven't performed the way you want to. And as a coach, I know you go back to the drawing board and you're trying to fill those holes and some of those holes that beat you in one run games. I know at Paint Valley, just we've played 13 games and we've been in 8 1 run games in the league. Just off the top of my head, even beyond us, I don't have scoreboard in front of me, but I think Huntington and Adina played a couple 1-run games. Unioda Adina played a 1-run game. Westfall and Adina played some 1-run games. Uh-huh. So, you know, you get my point. It's a situation that seems like every night the scoreboard comes out, and out of the 4 games, there's a couple 1-run games and then maybe a 2-run game or whatnot. So I think that really, really helps makes us battle tested for a tournament atmosphere in terms of going out, teams fall behind or teams get in tight games into the fourth and fifth inning. You'd like to think the panic won't set in, more so the comfort level and the focus will set in of, okay, we've been here before. Here's how we've lost these games. Here's how we've won these games. And that'll serve us some great experience to help some teams maybe advance a spot or two, because let's face it, sometimes the difference in getting beat in a sectional semifinal compared to being a district runner up is just winning a couple 1-run games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't play any better, any worse. It just could be you got a timely hit, or you made one plus play defensively, or you know, pitching wise, you're able to get out of a jam or whatnot. It could be a call. You know what I mean? Just a bang bang call going your way or not going your way. So the difference between really good and really bad is just not that much, and that's why I'm hoping that the SVC grind will be something that really prepares us.
All right, John, we move along, and I'm really interested in how you go into this one.
John's really set himself up
here. Yeah, he kind of has, hasn't he? Complete this sentence. My biggest concern for softball in the postseason is blank.
If we face a pitcher that can keep the ball in the yard. Because, I mean, Shane, you mentioned it earlier, Westfall has just a bevy of kids that can go deep. You know, what'll happen if they're kept in the yard, if they get rolled over into grounders, if their fly balls aren't going out, you know, what will happen with their offense? Now, I mentioned their state championship team a little while back. You know, that was a team that, okay, they, I don't know if they had the same power, but they had a lot of power. Well, they get the state championship game and they bought the entire night. And eventually that's what gets them to win. So I mean, I feel like they are built for that. I know Unioda's got a lot of power. Also, can these teams manufacture the runs necessary to win at the next level? And I think we have the coaching that can do it, to get us ready. Shane, you mentioned the pitching. I think the pitching's really strong in the league, and you know, I think that, you know, that's one of the things I think that the league has a good shot of winning is making the adjustments. Maybe the long ball is not happening on certain nights. Can they relax, focus on line drives, getting bunts down, small ball? I think that we have a chance to make a couple deeper runs if we can do that.
All right. Shane, how do you complete the sentence? My biggest concern for softball in the postseason is blank.
Well, I think John and I are really, really on the same track here, because I was asking, you know, is the championship formula of the regular season up to the task in the postseason? And I think he and I are on a very similar train of thought here of with Westfall. I thought he made a great point of when you're a team that hits – you know, it kind of reminds me on the baseball side, some of the Zane Trace teams over the years, mm-hmm. John, that just like fall out of bed and just hit two or three home runs a night. You know what I mean? Like they just, you know, they just, but then all of a sudden it just takes one time where you hit some line drives at people or you pop it up or the wind's blowing in or whatever the situation is, you know, can they manufacture enough of can a Dudgeon or a Pinkerton or a Fisher or Kello can they go at that level and win a 1-0 game if they need to? And I think – so, John, as I was listening to your answer and looking at my notes here, I thought to myself, man, we're really, really evaluating this softball league in a similar way. But now, on the other side of that, you know, they're used to scoring – in bunches. The other side of that is if the ball does fly out of the yard or if the games they can get in the slugfest and so forth, I think some of our lineups are a little bit deeper than maybe sometimes mm-hmm. you see in softball. So that'll be interesting. It's just, again, you expect for the pitching to really pick up as you advance into the sectional final and district semifinal rounds. So, yeah, I thought John was spot on there, Bruce.
All right. John, complete this. My biggest concern for baseball in the postseason is blank.
How SVC fans will go about budgeting their money to make sure to watch all of the SVC teams at the district level.
Really?
Yeah. It's just okay. I love our matchups. And it costs some money to pay to get into these games once you get to the district level. And I'm not sure where we go from there, but I really like the matchups for the SVC in Division III. I could definitely see Piketon will have a really difficult time with Medford if they get past a good Eastern Brown, but I they have the pitching that can give some issues to that really good Medford team. Obviously, you got to keep them off the base pass because that team can fly. But we could easily see SVC schools in out of Pate Stadium multiple nights in a row. Division III, Division IV. I think we could definitely see two SVC teams down at OU in Division II with Zane Trace and Uniota with at least decent matchups. Obviously, got to do a lot of winning, but. I just really like the tournament draws for the league, and I think you got a budget. Get your family to these games and get a lot of these young kids out.
Budget.
And,
budget. Yep.
Hey, it's you got a family of four. You gotta have $20. Take them there, and then you got to get there and whatnot.
Get your hot dogs with mustard, right?
Wow. If you're going going to the paints there, you've got to make a visit down to the picnic area, and that's mostly too, because I can never decide between the cheeseburger or the hot dog, and I always end up going both.
There you go.
Yeah. I knew that. And I mean, they have plenty of ketchup available. it's a great night. And when I was looking at the schedule, a lot of it would be different nights also. So that could be really – really fun.
You really have thought about this, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm a genius, and I think very highly of our baseball league too. So I feel like
and yourself,
you know, everyone should listen to me.
Okay, all right, we got that. All right, Shane, let's wrap it up here. My biggest concern for baseball in the postseason is blank.
Well, I talked battle tested. When I was talking confidence, I guess I'm going to go on the other side of that, because I think it goes both ways. And I'm going to say my biggest concern for baseball in the postseason is that parity has caused doubt. Yeah, I've seen that happen sometimes with teams, and I've seen that with young people. You know, you get in these one-run games, and they go the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And, John, you know this. What happens is you get in these situations in the fifth, sixth, seventh inning, and it's almost like you're looking around just waiting for something to happen. So, you know, in terms of a negative side. So I think that's something to really, really look out for as well as the one-run games and all these things really given the experience and the confidence that in battle test today, here we go, or is it a little bit of the doubt creeping in? Of, oh, no, here we go again. So I feel like it's going to be more on the positive side. I feel like we have really good programs that really believe that they belong, particularly as we stretch out and we play, you know, around the around the Southeast District. So, you know, I appreciate John's confidence in terms of already making the reservation for the Paints. I'm going to go ahead and try to figure out how to get Portsmouth out in the first round. But, yeah. You know, I mean, I certainly appreciate his confidence in our squads across. Hey, real quick, John, too, what's your opinion on playing at OU over playing at the Paints? Do you wish D2 would stay here local and play at the VA?
The only reason that I really enjoyed going down to OU last year. And really when that was the 1 year we made the regional when I was at Westfall it was down at OU instead of at the VA. Of course when we had to ride the bus down there, it wasn't real fun. But it's just a different atmosphere. It's a different place to play.
Right.
I think we're kind of spoiled by having the Paint Stadium.
Agree.
And getting to and we're in it a lot, so yeah. I think it's just something different.
Difference probably cool. I know when we went to the regional back-to-back years there in 14-15, we went to Lancaster in D4. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful ballpark. So I mean, yeah. I can understand what you're saying by just something a little different, maybe spread out and see some different things and maybe get some different fans seeing some of our elite teams at that level, getting a chance to see them play. Sure.
Yeah. It also, and this is kind of me being a huge basketball fan, also kind of it feels right. Because you go down to the convo for district basketball, so why not play in the shadow of the convo for district baseball and softball? It's now, you know, I hope that we have this issue this year where one of our SEC teams is able to get to the regional in Division II. And I just pray, I haven't looked at the brackets yet. I just really hope they don't try to make it go back to Zanesville because OU is just a great facility and Zanesville is not. To be completely honest, I would much rather just go to Lancaster, because I love Beaver Stadium or Beaver Field, whatever. And I just really don't, if I'm going to go support or go coach in a game up there, I really don't want it to be in Zanesville.
Zanesville's a hall too, isn't it? I mean,
It, the worst part, it's a hall and it's a dump. So it's not like it's a hall to go play in this really nice stadium. No, it's a football stadium that has bad dugouts, just a bad playing field. It's just,
Don't hold back. Tell us what you really think.
It's terrible.
Okay.
Is that better?
That's good.
Yeah.
John Bruce with subtitles, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, later in the show, we'll return to baseball and softball to talk about the postseason honors. But next, we talk track as we've reached the part of the season where things get serious. This section of our podcast brought to you once again by Crown Hill Golf Club, 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. Telephone number up there, 740-986-4653. look them up on the web, crownhillgolfclub.com. And if you're looking to have an outing or some great party facilities, you can give them a call at Crown Hill Golf Club. They've got both of those things for you. Well, guys, we're going to talk track a little bit. And Shane, right out of the gate, you know, we've tried to cover track in the past. We do our best, but there's something about track coverage that's hard to do throughout the regular season. We've kind of alluded to it, I think, where you're going with this, but what do you think is hard to do throughout the regular season to cover track?
I think it's just it's tough to get an honest look at teams.
Yeah.
As I've said before, I've tried to really reach out to track coaches and look at a lot of different things. If I'm being honest, they just are pacing themselves and trying to. Yeah, I had one track coach, John, talk to me about like weightlifting. You know, you wouldn't max every other day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You work a while and the times that you max are really those times where you hope you're at your peak and you're trying to see what you can do. And they compare that to a track season where, you know, you're trying to work as hard as you possibly can, but really time it up to where you're going to run your very best. And now we've reached that point. You know, we're at the SVC here Monday, Friday up at Westfall. And for a lot of teams, they know that, you know, they'll try to get some individuals to the banquet there in the all league situation. But realistically, they know that they can't compete. But they know as they separate a week later into district, trying to get some regional qualifiers and stuff, that's what they're going to try to peak for. So, you know, that's kind of where we're at here. I guess what I would ask, John, just to try to really look at our SVC track championships is there a particular, as you read some of the bomb page stuff and listen to some of the different things throughout, are there some particular events or maybe a matchup, something that maybe you're wanting to watch here come Monday or Friday here in terms of the SVC championships?
It's two events. It's the same event, 100-meter dash. Mm. Now, I was actually pleasantly surprised by seeing the numbers on the boys side from the Ross County meet on people being moderately close to Lane Ruby, like at least within the same second. So we have some really fast athletic kids, but I mean, anytime you get to watch somebody like Lane compete and do what he does, it's just really fun to watch. I mean, he's at these like showcases and whatnot running like low 4.4s in the 40, and you get to watch him do it for 100 meters. So, you know, it's can anyone push him? I'm not sure. He ran 11.2 at the Ross County meet. There's 11.5 behind him, 11.8, which are at least in the realm. Can anyone make it closer? Does he push it a little bit more and, you know, try to get below 11? Could be really fun to watch. And then a matchup, on the girls' side, Abby Mohan from Zane Trace won the, 100 meter on the girls' side at the Ross County meet. Now from Unio to Paris DeBoard, she's a freshman, didn't run mm-hmm. in the Ross County meet, but ran a extremely similar time at the Circleville invite on Friday. So I think that could be a just really fun matchup to watch. I'm not sure if they've ever raced against each other. It'll be a senior against a freshman. The DeBoard girl can flat out fly. And Abby Mohan's one of the really special athletes that we have in the league, and especially on the running side. So that could be a really fun matchup to watch. You know, and then also just anytime you get to watch Allison Basie and all the other just great athletes that we have in the SVC, it's, you know, the SVC track meet is something you should really get out and watch. And it should be really fun. Mm-hmm. Now, Shane, is there a headline or a key thing that you have to watch for when you're looking at track?
I think it has a lot to do with some of the youth or like you said, some of the elite kids. I try to look at some of the head to head matchups, you know, when they're trying to get their best. I know there was a particular race for example, the other night into 200 on the girls' side. Hannah Addy there of Zane Trace and Michaela Thompson, Uniota, basically two-tenths of a second. I mean, those are two kids we know from some soccer and some other sports that can really, really run. So you're getting to see them in a different thing. You know, you've watched these kids compete. Maybe I've coached against them in terms of, you know, you love, you know, what Basie's doing. And then you love how, like, you know, and Abby Stanforth's been pitching all year, but now she comes over and she does these hurdle events too, and so forth. And then the Lovely sisters going at it.
I was going to mention that.
that's they've been pretty much 1-2 in everything they've been. Now, has someone been hiding back or holding back? That, you know, that'll be interesting to see. On the boys' side, I think it's the depth of Uniota and Zane Trace, but I think it's the star power of some of these other teams. Like take Paint Valley, for example. They probably don't have the depth of team that, you know, was able to win the league there a while back, but, you know, they still have a lot of those individuals. You know, are they going to maybe be able to put together a couple relay teams? You know, I've had certain coaches tell me in the past from these smaller schools, and this isn't necessarily Paint Valley, I'm just using this as an example of, you know, a lot of times if you can't win, you know, you're trying to highlight your individuals and kids, where, you know, by winning a relay, John, you get four kids get to go to the banquet or become all league. So, you know, gosh, Paint Valley, just off the top of my head, I know they have a couple different things. They could piece together a couple relay teams that would be phenomenal. But yeah, I mean, you see the depth there of Union and Zane Trace, but I know like Hurt of Adina in the throwing events and Fisher of Huntington and so forth. So I guess that's probably what I would look for as we go through. But you know, Basie and Ruby seem to be kids that have not been asked to this point to run a lot of relay stuff, which opens them up a little bit more for medalists. A lot of times, if you're going to run in multiple relays, your chance of you know, being the medalist or tracks version of SVC Player of the Year, you know, that's very difficult to do. Now, that's been a debate we've had on SVC Sports Talk before too, Bruce, in terms of, you know, should relays still count as full wins for the individual? Mm-hmm. You know, and again, I've always said I don't know that I'm qualified to answer that. I mean, as a fan, it's a shame when I see a kid win two individual races and then go, you know, say anchor a couple relays and win. Well, to me, that's pretty dominant.
Yeah.
And you're telling me they're not up for player of the year. You know what I mean? So like in the sports I've been around, I guess I don't agree with it, but that's kind of where I come from. So I look forward to running some of these results back here in the future, getting them out on the website there and see how it comes. But equally impressive is going to be the following week in terms of when our league splits up into divisions on how some of our talent can spread out into the regional level, I'm sure, this year.
Hey, Shane. Yeah. Sorry, Bruce.
Okay.
I just want to ask you a personal question.
Yeah.
How insanely fast was Regina Thomas? I was looking at the SVC meet record page that you posted.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I mean, she had four records for 1 year. It's just.
Yeah, like I'll hear coaches now be like, well, we're trying to peak for this and run. If I run this and this, I'd get tired, or, you know, well, evidently she didn't quite agree with that particular format. Yeah, I mean, there were certainly some athletes there at Uniota right around the time I graduated. Now, Regina was a year older than me, but, you know, yeah, she was terrific. And you look back through, I don't have that page up, but you're talking back around the time of Julie Wilkins and Nikki Steinbrook. And, you know, so Regina was on some of those relay teams as well. JT's sister,
Mary Beth Harp,
was an outstanding runner as well. So, yeah, Regina was special. If we were to talk all time track, she would certainly be on a short list that you'd have to look at for sure. Yeah.
And what night are the SVC track championships?
Monday, Friday.
Okay.
And they're at Westfall.
Okay. All right. We'll be watching for that. Guys, in this week's Coach's Corner, we take a different look at coaching evaluation as we talk postseason honors. Yeah.
like that coming out of Born to Run, coming out of the track segment? Wasn't that good, John?
Oh, I love The Boss.
Yeah, well.
I think I know two songs.
Okay.
And Born to Run and whichever Christmas song he does.
Okay. That just eclipsed your knowledge there.
Yeah. And I know the Courtney Cox video one.
Yeah.
Which I can't think of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of track and running, I do have to let you guys know that I will be taking back my resignation from the show, as I found out that Maximum Security was actually disqualified last night in the Derby, so I will not be cashing my $250,000 Exacta.
Okay. You're just now catching on to that?
I was alerted.
Okay, well,
heartbroken.
I'm glad that news reached you before you had resigned entirely. So we hadn't gotten the resignation letter here on the desk. So Shane, I can't speak for you, but I will consider him still employed here on the show. Okay. All right, guys, our segment here brought to us by North Fork Animal Clinic Boarding and Grooming, 740-773-PETS, located at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe, where we care. Open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 9 a.m. to 12, and the Doggy Dead Care Center, open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff welcome you. Give them a call again, 740-773-PETS. We head to our Coach's Corner. And, Shane, we're going to do a little something different this week. I understand, so I'm going to ask you, what brought this idea on for this week's Coach's Corner?
Well, basically just sake of time. You know, I mean, we're getting down the last couple shows here and so forth, and these particular things are adding up. A lot of questions that come in last week, and I kind of let people know that we had a special 250 plan with some people coming on and so forth, and then a couple more come in this week, and I just thought that it's kind of the responsibility. When you're a young coach, you just feel like, hey, I make a practice plan, I get kids ready to play, and then that's coaching. Well, in reality, that's not even close. You know what I mean? It's all the other stuff. It's all the other responsibility in terms of organization and paperwork and filing and different things. And then, one of your main responsibilities is how you handle, your all league, and you're representing your own kids and you're representing your league and so forth. And there's a lot of maturity and a lot of focus and a lot of responsibility that comes into play there. So just in the sake of time, I felt like, why not bring this into the coach's quarter? And I guess if it's okay,
sure,
go Bruce, right ahead. I'll just go right into John here. Yeah. I had a question. John, it's been a huge pet peeve of mine over the past 20 years. And I really pushed it for a year or two. And the thing called money is what scared the league away. Imagine that. And, I'd even kind of jumped to the front saying I would help with some awards or do some different things here at the website. But it's in the spring all-league format in terms of how we are forced to make pitching the absolute factor. And I'm not saying it's not. You know what I mean? Like, as long as we do it under the current format, how you would ever vote in softball and not consider pitching as part of the equation – I don't know how you could do that, because again, you're talking about a kid that takes the ball on most teams and, pitches every game or at least every other game, in terms of you doing that. And then in baseball, if I'm looking at two kids and I'm looking at one kid who's won, six games, seven games, eight games on the mound, or is pitched in eight, nine games with an ERA of whatnot, some strikeouts. And I'm comparing that to a kid that, plays, say center field and is a really good hitter, that is going to be a big factor. So I guess my pet peeve is how we have not been able to separate the pitching from the position player in terms of developing or honoring the five tool player. And I've seen it drop quite a bit. So I guess what I'm asking you is your take on this. One, do you agree that pitching has to be a dominant factor in terms of the current way we do it in baseball, softball? And two, would you be open-minded to doing something like, you've heard me mention on the baseball side, do like a top five all league pitching staff, you know, like the Cy Young Award winner in our league could be like the Zach Farmer, you know, award or so forth. And then maybe come over to the position side and honor them a little bit differently to where some of the kids that maybe do not pitch could be honored a little bit more in a fair assessment in terms of their overall ability.
Yeah, I completely agree. The state, you know, how the coaches do it across the state is you have two first team pitchers, then you have a first team first baseman, then you have, was it four first team infielders, then your outfielders and DH. I don't know why we can't do that. And then you go to player of the year, and it's probably going to be between your player and pitcher of the year. Well, it's that way it doesn't make it to where a kid that, you know, is a dominant catcher or a dominant infielder, but doesn't pitch, isn't hurt by the fact that they don't pitch. So, like, I'll use Tegan McFadden. I mean, he was an unreal catcher in the league for 4 years. And, you know, does that hurt him that he was not a pitcher? Even though he's playing every game, he's hitting three hole, he's catching every inning. Does it hurt him? And it really shouldn't, but it obviously does. With how much emphasis we put on pitching in the league, and really in baseball, to be able to do multiple things, you know, is really impressive. But it shouldn't hinder the kids that are not a pitcher, because maybe they're more important in that other spot, or maybe they have a deep pitching staff and they don't get any innings. So I think it'd be nice to see if we could switch it up a little bit. You know, it here's the thing. Your pitcher of the year could be your player of the year 1 year. Okay, then you don't have to spend the whatever amount of money on the plaque. You just put two things on the same plaque. Like, it's just, to me, it's kind of lazy. It's kind of like the Southeast Ohio thing, where we could definitely could do it to where we honor more kids, and it doesn't we don't hamper the kid for not being a pitcher.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing I would throw out is, you've heard me say this in my volleyball teams, Bruce, is, you know, take basketball for example. You know, they start what, 40 kids in a year, and they honor 15. That's about a 37.5-38% clip of starters. Well, you know, we honor 18, but we start 72, and we start 80 at the DH.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a situation where in no way are we watering it down. And I just, you know, when I look through the just the teams that I'm coaching against, and I'm looking at scouting reports and so forth of, you know, like if you start with a Dean and you look at the year Zach Fouts had, but you look at, say, the pitching of an Ethan Kunkel or a Garrison, or, you know, like when you consider the year that the talented sophomore Freeze had at Huntington, but then you look at an overall value of McCloskey, and I understand he pitches too, but, you know, I mean, in terms of those things, like you look at Mettler and Blanton at Paint Valley and what they've had, but then you compare it to like an everyday player of like McDonald, who's been an Ohio kid and is obviously a very, very talented offensive player. I'm sure there's other examples. Southeastern, like how are you going to sit here and evaluate a McWhorter against a Deal?
Yeah.
Or a Gillum, you know what I mean? They're good. Well, here's one that you watch, you know, not every day as a JV coach, but you understand you're around.
Yeah.
Like, take the DeBoards. That you could argue they're the best two players in the league in a lot of ways, but, like, you know, the one as a pitcher takes his value up in our current format, whereas, you know, Carson's a special talent, man.
Yeah.
He's really, really good. Whereas, like, a Jeremy Lambert, he's an all-league pitcher, but is he an all-league player? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's a really tough discussion. The Westfall, gosh, Trevor's got a long list of athletes there. I laughed the other night. I said Westfall's baseball team could finish third in the track league. you know what I mean? It's just they'd go out there and grab a disc and shot and run some 800s and jump and, you know, do all sorts of things. They're so athletic. But you know, if you've watched the Titan Williams kid go get it in center field, now I know he pitches a little bit. It's not totally what he does, but like, you know, is there a better defender in the league than that young man? You know,
right.
I don't know. It's tough.
And then you look at his current catcher in the Spawn kid.
Good player. Yeah.
Yeah. He's had an awesome year too, but he's a catcher only.
Another catcher, is that right?
Yes, yes. And then you have like the Blackburn kid who's totally shut us down twice. He would definitely be on the all league pitching team. But is he going to be on the all league team as an overall player? You know, just similar numbers to a little better hitting numbers than Jeremy Lambert's, even though Jeremy's been hitting better the last half of the year. But it's just, I think to honor the actual baseball teams, it should be, we should try to honor as many kids as we can with different positions. I just think it'd be pretty easy to do.
And I understand, like, you know, again, like a Chad Eisen's a kid that comes to mind where he very well could be a number one guy on a team that could win the SEC championship. Mm-hmm. We don't know yet, but he's obviously a kid that is an all league talent in terms of player and pitcher. I understand there could be both, but I guess, you know, like, but I look at the Farley kid. I know he's starting to pitch a little bit for them, but if he wouldn't have started the pitch this year, does that mean he's not a top 10 type of talent in our league?
Right.
I mean, that's nuts. So, you know, and then on the softball side, I understand it's similar as well. Now, I know Pinkerton does pitch, but like if we were just looking at offensive talent, you know, where, you know, take the defense and the offensive input of, you know, say a Pinkerton, or an offensive skill set of Miller there at Uniota, or McFadden at Paint Valley in terms mm-hmm. of what she's hit over the last 3 years. And then not to mention, you know, her catching throughout her career, starting with the talent of like a Michaela Newland. That's not the easiest thing to handle, you know, and throughout the whole career. So I just look at some of these particular hitters from Westfall, and at the end of the day, you know, I'm sure, and I have no idea what happened in the softball voting, but I'm sure a Marcy Dudgeon becomes very, very valuable because not only is she one of those hitters, but she's a kid that takes the ball in the circle for a team that hasn't lost a softball game in a long time you know, in the league. So, you know, I'm sure as you go down through, it'd be interesting, like on the softball team, to look at the 9 first team kids and look at how many of them are the everyday pitchers for their particular team. Because off the top of my head, you know, doesn't Dudgeon have to be first team all league? Doesn't Pinkerton mm-hmm. have to be first team all league? Doesn't Kello have to be first team all league? You know, I'm just throwing those out there. So very, very interesting. I think it's interesting to see how, until we learn to separate those, it's going to be very, very difficult for us to truly honor our entire. And I think we could even go as far as honoring 22, 23 different kids and not water it down at all when you consider the percentage of kids that we're honoring in other sports.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Bruce, I don't know if you have anything to throw. John and I are throwing some things back and forth there as you're listening to that. And
I just wondered how do the other conferences do this? Do they do it similarly, or they have a different plan? Do you know?
Well, I'm going to be honest. We do it from what I gather. We do it better than most. And you've heard me say this before on SVC Sports Talk. Our league does a lot of things better than most. It just does. I've always said it doesn't mean we can't do them better. Like, you know, there's a lot of schools or a lot of leagues that, you know, will say, based on where you finish, you get this many kids or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And I've never bought into that at all. Take girls basketball, for example, this year. You could argue that Huntington had the best two individuals in the entire league and then didn't have another all-league kid.
Right.
You know what I mean? In terms of the way the voting went. So, like, does that mean they should have automatically gotten two or three more because of where they finished? I think you have to trust coaches to understand the league and do it right. I guess this is more of a situation of the coaches are having their hands tied because, you know, I have no choice but to favor some different pitchers mm-hmm. that do some different things. That, you know, I'm sure I've had coaches tell me this week, I'm sure when you compete against us, if Lane Mettler's on and he's striking out 13 that night, Well, I'm sure that he, you know, is really, really valuable. And he obviously is. Mm-hmm. Or when I'm going against a cammed board and, you know, we don't get a hit. Well, he obviously had something to do with us losing right. that night. You know, it's a situation where all of these kids are probably all league talents, but there are situations where some kids would be all league pitchers, but not all league players. And that's probably what's become really hard to factor in and get. So, you know, the way we do it isn't bad. It's just I'm throwing something out there that I feel would just be a little bit of improvement. I guess that's what I want to say is it's another example of where our SVC still does it really, really well. When you look at our all-league banquet, if you've had a chance to go to one of those, it's very impressive. It's very classy. It's well done. Mm-hmm. It's something that I'm sure those high school kids look at as a pretty cool memory and chance to take some pictures and be a part of something there. You know, do you agree with that, John? I mean, I feel like it's very just we do a nice job of honoring our kids.
Oh, I think we do an amazing job. There's, you know, from what I've heard about other leagues, it doesn't sound like it's as well done as ours. I still think we could still make improvements, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to see us do that in the future.
All right, guys, I'm sure those listening to us also have their own opinions and would like to contribute, perhaps. And if they do, they can do so by email to Shane, his email address, admin1@svcsportszone.com. He is available on Twitter, where his handle is @svcsportszone. On Facebook, he maintains two profiles, Shane Combs, SVC Sports Zone, and svcsportszone.com. John is available on email, jbruce1018@yahoo.com. And, of course, as explained last week, John Bruce's handle on Twitter, @CoconutWallPapa. And might mention, too, when these guys do tweet, they use the hashtag SVCSportsTalk. And then if you wish to talk with or communicate with Derek Webb, who contributes from time to time, you can do so at the verified account of @DW1509, and his email is DerekW1509@gmail.com. So that's how you can provide us some input. We'd love to hear from you, good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah, Derek had real nice coverage. I appreciate that of the softball championship game there last week. You know, where Westfall, John, you mentioned the Miller home run there, and then how Westfall came back and scored. He had that really well covered for us with some pictures there, and certainly appreciate that. So check that out. But now, guys, now Bruce, how many shows we have left here? Well, 2019.
I was going to ask you that. I don't know. I was kind of in the back of my mind. I think we maybe have two shows left. Does that sound
I think
right?
we debated we were going to do two, or mm-hmm. we were going to do one, and then maybe look to see what was out there in terms of maybe calling a game or covering a game that if KKJ and the radio could not get out and about to cover as much as you know, we hoped that if the technology allowed it, that maybe John and I would see if in our schedule if we were available to do something like that. So you want to kind of throw out to the fans here maybe that we're looking to do two more things this year, either two shows or a show and a game or something like that maybe. So I think that'll be a lot of fun. So John, we'll kind of continue to look and see if that's doable. A lot of times what we find in baseball, softball, unfortunately, is these particular places are not set up to just do it from a technology standpoint. So we'll certainly see how that goes. So guys, I'll tell you what, we'll go ahead and get on out of here this week. A great show. I think we talked a lot of kids, a lot of programs, and we'll certainly get back at it next week. So until then, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center and all the other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the people behind the scenes in at DBK Media Services, and for John Bruce, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportszone.com, where we are 100% SVC. 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.